atmosphere, so there are no craters. But analyzing the xenon 129 on Martian atmosphere and the uranium and thorium on the surface as a dust that is there shows the presence of two unnatural nuclear explosions, most likely triggered by, say, alien invaders. So, one was in the Pravilink, in the Sidonia Medeza area. There was the bigger one, and the other one was in Galaxy of Chaos. He made a map, and he pointed on that map exactly the places of the explosion. He also placed an artifact that is a Martian face, the Sphinx, and few other structures that looks like a very much man-made structure. And he assigned that those structures would come from the Martian being in the Bronze Age or in development of civilization. So then I asked Roy, what would be if then somebody is looking at the Earth at the time of the pharaohs? Would actually he be able to notice the pyramids and the John came with the idea of the Chinese wall. So then we would say, okay, now we have an artifact, not many of them, but we were looking at the Mars only from one perspective and very much limited area. And that's what you would be able to see where the Sphinx face and sort of five sort of the Jewish star. It's like a five very much significant points. And he there was even the structure that was drawn. And that, of course, there is original picture, image of the ruins of the structure of Martian surface. That John Brandenburg says is the man, it's not a man-made, it's an intelligent creature-made structure. So in other words, we have a story of one alien, very much intelligent forces liquidating other intelligent life in space. That's actually what he postulates. So, I wouldn't really pay attention to it, that's what I said yesterday, but what the heck? Once the information went out, why do you stop it? You're just creating a notion. What an idiotic a reaction. The whole notion about Manning, who is in jail right now, is not because he leaked information. It's just because there was a certain approach, and that was projected to the public in a certain way. Otherwise, it wouldn't be noticed. The same was with the Snowden. It would not be noticed if it wasn't projected this way. My understanding is, now we have a scientist, we have a journal, the journal is financed by CERN, and the publication is free of charge. So it's one of very few, if only one, that does the job this way. So they even say that the publication is being paid by CERN, and now they stop it from viewing. Unbelievable. What is it? To prevent a mass hysteria, they create more speculation on it. And to actually,
there have been people who have speculated that intelligent life could have simultaneously developed on Mars as well as Earth. And the things that would direct you to think maybe not. Mars is a smaller planet, further from the sun, running cooler, less water, less atmosphere, less magnetic field, can't hold on to its atmosphere, the chances of it having lived a desirable environment for a long enough period of time to develop intelligent life, let me drop it. And then they weren't able to protect themselves from the decreasing environment conditions and left absolutely no artifacts that you can see. I'm having a lot of trouble with all of this. I really don't believe that intelligent life ever developed on Mars. If they did, they would have left artifacts. If you take a really good-sized telescope on the surface of Mars and you look at Earth, and you want to prove that there is life on Earth because you can see the pyramids, I think the answer is no. I don't think a good-sized telescope on Mars has the ability to see the pyramids or the Great Wall. Those are two fine details. Over to US, K2RIW.
Well, Dick, that would be easy if we went with this route of thinking. What Brandenburg postulates is that Martians were not wiped out because of the explosion of the nitrogen bomb. They were wiped out because of the changes to the atmosphere that nitrogen bomb, or something that had a pattern of the nitrogen bomb, created. So the immediate thought that arises is that people on Earth might be afraid that they will not die directly from the causes of the nitrogen bomb, but from all of the after effects. So Xenon 129 appears only in a small amount in the Earth, and is a typical fusion the component of the explosion. The explosion of hydrogen bomb dramatically increase the concentration. And the other sign of the powerful explosion on the hydrogen bomb on Mars were affected by isotopic anomalies of heavy inert gas such as a krypton, and the distribution of isotopes of krypton on Mars were very similar to the distribution in the Sun, which actually Sun is a nuclear device by itself. And the Xenon anomaly reversed krypton isotope fractionation taking place on Martian atmosphere. And this could be explained by the large number of reaction, fusion, and fusion in the history of Mars. So, we may say, okay, the guy is retired right now, which I believe after this revelation, and he had nothing to lose, okay? He came out with what he thought or what he knows. Or, the guy flipped. I could flip, you could flip, John, and Dick. Well, question is, when you were speculating on presence of aliens on the Earth, you said in one of the discussions, I strongly believe that something must be there. Now, we have a guy who spent his life working for the Defense Department, and he works in the warfare, the star warfare. The guy is coming out of the closet with this revelation. Would you then say, hey, it does have a positive turn of sorting with his revelation, or the meaning, right, with his revelation, or it's quite a different feature? We're not going to qualify it to the group of the probability and to achieve.
Wes, from what you read and believe, do you believe intelligent life was once on Mars, that it developed on Mars and wasn't seeded there? Do you believe intelligent life once developed on Mars, and by some kind of terrible event, all of their artifacts are no longer observable? We've got so darn many satellites going around Mars doing so darn much mapping to hide all of the artifacts of an intelligent race. would be very difficult. If all human beings were no longer on Earth for some reason, and you come back a million years later and look at Earth with the right kind of satellites, I'm reasonably sure you're going to see evidence that mankind was there, artifacts. So do you believe Mars developed intelligent life? Over to US, KQRIW.
That was a good question. I remember in Poland, one of the famous professors, Lukiewicz, who was my professor, he said that the most intelligent way of turning the subject in question out of the person that is being asked the question is ask another question. I did ask you the question, now you're asking me the same questions. So, would you please say, what do you think? Is it possible that any bacteria, or he said the bacteria and the primitive life forms could be still present in the planet Mars? Now, what do you think about it? And to actually,
I have a comment, Dick.
Yeah, I think Mars in its early days could have gone as far as to develop bacterial life. That doesn't strike me as too difficult. But for all of the stages of evolution to go all the way up to intelligent life, and for Mars to stay stable for a long enough period of time, I've got a lot of doubts on that one. Over to you, John. KC2WGB, KQRIW.
KC2WGB. Yeah, Dick, just a quick comment. Wesley actually presented it a little bit of an error. What I was speaking about, we in orbital satellites can detect the pyramids, the Chinese Wall, a lot of the infrastructure here. Now, if a civilization developed into the Bronze Age, they would have had structure, infrastructure. We on Earth can detect the ancient Silk Road camel paths. There's no road there, but they know there's a path. None of that has been spotted by all of the satellites circling Mars. That's what I was claiming when Roy and Wes and I were having a discussion. So for all of that to disappear and no trace of any structural and that mask or whatever that thing is, it's been proven that, look at it from a different angle, it's a pile of rocks. So, you know, I put nothing in this that has any validity.
Yeah, Sagan used to say, an extraordinary claim requires extraordinary evidence. And we've got very little evidence of higher life forms on Mars. Now, whether or not the Earth has been visited by higher life forms, a fair amount of evidence of that. And I guess Fermi at one time was saying that, okay, if they were here, how come they didn't contact us? How come we haven't had conversation with them? And I see the possibility, although it's science fiction, I see the possibility of the so-called prime directive. In other words, don't announce your presence because you might destabilize them. Leave them alone. And so stay hidden, so to speak. It is possible that alien life forms that may have visited the Earth have that philosophy, in which case, even though they may have visited, that would be one explanation as to why we haven't had a conversation with them. Over to US, KQRIW.
Well, I'm taking the whole picture, not only the picture of possible life on Mars, but also what's going on in the Earth. This very much prestigious journal has a very strict rules. He says that 80% of 100% of invited articles are being rejected. But once it is approved, it's there. So we have a sort of coincidence right now, where 2 days after we found about it, now the article is unavailable. So the best Mars, the discoverer of the planet nuclear massacre, and will be published in February of 2015. He reviews 2014 annual fall meeting of the American Physical Society. And in the paper that is not accessible right now, and it was published in Journal of Cosmology and Astroparticle Physics, which is volume 14. I could go to that. I have it somewhere open. Whatever. I'm going to find it. What was the reason for it? One thing is probability of life on Mars, probability of any similarity that would happen on Mars to happen on the Earth. Yeah, that's the question. But then the other question would be, hey, how big if something of that is truth? 5% of it is truth. Okay, I think I found it. No, I didn't. I'm trying to give you exactly that article, so at least the words about an article that I'm talking about is confirmed by the audience. You got it. Journal of Cosmology, 2014, volume 24. Number 13, pages 12,229 to 12,280. And the title is Thermonuclear Explosion in Mars, in Mars Past. It might be subtitle, Evidence of Massive Thermonuclear Explosion in Mars. Okay. When something is a baloney, it's a baloney. People should not be afraid of it, especially a prestigious organization should not be. If you don't want to create a conspiracy theory, you don't do the stupid things, especially when you're exposed to the public. In other words, Dr. Brandenburg says that the red color of the Mars and the radioactive substance in the soil are the result of thermonuclear explosion from the natural causes. However, the high concentration of the xenon-129 in Martian atmosphere and the uranium and the thorium on the surface is the evidence of the explosion of the nuclear energy device that has all of the signs of the hydrogen bomb. So the question is, who are the aliens inviting, eventually wiping out, if we say that there were any? Bradley believes that Mars once had a climate like an Earth, or similar one, was inhabited by two civilizations, one in the region of called Sidonia Meneta, and the other one was in Galaxies of Chaos. Both of them were assigned as the Bronze Age. So they were not able to be too much noisy, if they were ever. And also, he says that further information from the face on the Mars in Sidonia developed a very much geometric dependability that gives us an information of intelligent origin of it, and to achieve.
Okay, I gave my answer, Wes. What's, from all the reading you've done and all the talking you've done, what's your belief as to how high a life form has occurred on Mars, and how high a life form do you think has visited Earth? Over to you, Wes, K2RIW.
Well, I'm very much skeptical about life on Mars, myself. However, when we examine the undersea bacteria, especially in the areas where you have a high temperature, where nothing could possibly be expected to be alive, we surprisingly find out that the life forms that are present there, I may say, said that the primitive form of life could be present right now on the planet Mars. Was that intelligent life? Well, the theory of the Big Bang wasn't something that Dick was sitting in his house and he thought about, I have a theory of the Big Bang. No, that was something that was at first invented and then publicized and then accepted. But we have a certain process. Is it possible that this gentleman has something that he is based on and this thing has a merit? Maybe I ask you this question, and then I go to the audience in the earth. Yes, my belief, strong belief is yes, we had a visit of the aliens in the earth. Back to you.
Let's see where John falls on this one, John. What's your current belief on what you've heard, read, talked, and been exposed to? KC2WGB, K2LIW.
Well, Dick, there was a lot discussed that has not been exposed right now, such as an extraterrestrial alien went to Mars and wiped out that civilization of the Bronze Age. Why would they do that? I don't know. There's no threat. They have no control of the planet, really, at that stage in the game. And even if they did, it wouldn't cause the infrastructure to disappear. Now, as far as the aliens, I believe in life outside of our organization here, for sure. Otherwise, you're just an arrogant fool if you don't. But have they been here? There, I'm not sure. I think confidence is low there. But I do believe that they may have sort of drones, space drones, or something like that, traveling around, taking pictures or whatever they're doing, investigating the rest of this cosmos. Sure, I think that's very possible. So, but as far as visitations and people being kidnapped and probed and things like that, I don't think that happens. Maybe just in Arkansas, I don't know. That's what Roy said. But, yeah, no, I don't have any belief in anything in this conversation when it comes to Mars. Don't forget, the atmosphere disappeared because the magnetic field was not there to protect it, and the sun blew it away. So, now, could there be residue? Now, where are they getting this data from about this atomic structure that they think is from an atomic bomb? Hold, let me let it drop. Nobody seems to know. Okay, where with the data, the chain of evidence of the data and all that kind of stuff is just missing. So now, when you think about it, it seems that the cosmic scientists describe how Mars developed and what happened to it. I think they have a good rendition of why the planet is a dead zone. But, imagination can make you wild. You know, Wesley's reading some report from a guy who's supposed to have some credibility, but I think maybe he did go nuts. I have no idea. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, I think I agree with much of that. And of the things that are difficult to believe, one of the things Roy and I were discussing two nights ago is the subject of infinity. If I go in one single direction forever, does space curve back on itself? Roy, for a while, seemed to be believing that. I'm having trouble with that one. Is there an end to space? I say there can't be an end, because if there's a wall out there, eventually somebody's going to go out there and drill a hole in the wall and find out what's beyond. So, although it wasn't an easy one to accept at first, I have very little problem today accepting that space goes on to infinity, and in that infinity, there are multiple other so-called universes beyond our observable 13.7 billion light years. For us to think that there was only one, let me drop. There was only one Big Bang, and we're in it, and there never was another Big Bang in any other universes. We've got to come up with some other words for this. As the astronomers came up with realizing that we're a solar system that's part of what used to be called an island universe, and eventually came up with the word galaxy, we got to come up with a word for 10 to the 11 galaxies that we know of in our observable universe. That's not the whole thing. I'm convinced there's a lot more out there. And so once you accept that as a possibility, you suddenly realize that when you radiate energy, it doesn't get wasted. It just goes to some other universe, one of the multiverses that are outside of ours. And correspondingly, they're sending out energy periodically in electromagnetic waves that come to us. But I can understand the fact that a lot of people can't accept space going on in a straight line forever to infinity. However, except for the curving back on itself, how can it be any other way? As I said before, you construct a wall out there. This time somebody drill a hole in the wall and find out what's beyond. There can't be an end, is my current thinking. Does that bother you, John? KC2WGB, K2IW.
Well, when you start talking about infinity, it really can get complicated, because if you had an infinite universe, you're going to have an infinite content of galaxies, because as you expand it, it expands. Well, it doesn't appear that there's an infinite number, although we have not found an area where there isn't something that still is nowhere near infinity. If it was infinite, I think there would be a lot more stars to view. So that's a little confusing to me. Is it possible that it could be a universe in a spherical shape totally, and that it bends back and curves around and comes back? I think it's possible, and like you said, if you looked far enough, would you see the back of your head? Well, maybe that's impossible because of the distance of that infinite circle. It could be.
Where are you going?
Yeah, I heard Wes saying something, and it was another double. Who was the other person?
AC2GS.
There he is.
Hey, Roy. Straighten us out on this stuff, Roy. I know that when the first time I talked to you about infinity, you were having some trouble with it, and maybe you still are. So, is infinite space that difficult to accept? By the way, John, you were saying that it gets thinner after. You implied that the Hubble deep field and the ultra deep field and the extreme deep field show more and more galaxies out there. Our observable universe doesn't suddenly end in galaxies. We just go to a distance where we can't see them anymore. Too much redshift, too much Hubble constant. But the number of galaxies out at the observable perimeter is not going to zero. If anything, it might be doing the opposite. Over to you, Roy. AC2GS, K2LAW.
AC2GS. Well, I mean, there's two aspects of the universe. There's the observable and there is the unobservable, because there's a light cone that limits our ability to perceive and observe the universe. And beyond that range, we can't see anything. I still have problems with the concept of an unbound infinite universe, because even empty space is something. So you have a lot of something forever. You can't really have a boundary layer, because the boundary layer is something. So what is that? So the only way I can wrap my mind around something that has an edge but doesn't really have an edge is if it curves back on itself. And then it's not really a solid shield, but an aspect of warped space-time.
Roy, what evidence is there that you know of that if you go in one direction in space, it eventually curves back on itself, and in theory you come back to the back of your own head? What evidence is there of that, as opposed to what we see with the all those Hubble deep field and ultra and extreme deep field pictures? I don't think there's any evidence there of curving back. You see more and more galaxies with greater and greater redshift, and yeah, a higher percentage of them what's the word for them? I can't think of the word for it now. Globular thing, if you know what I mean. They look like they're earlier formations that haven't formed into the more classic galaxy forms yet. can't think of the word for that, a three-letter abbreviation. But still, there's no sparsity of galaxy-like things out at the perimeter of the observable universe. That suggests to me that the curving back on itself, we haven't seen much evidence of it, and I see the possibility of it going to infinity, even though it's beyond our observable sphere. What about you, Roy? KQIW?
Dick, a quick note. Don't forget, we think we can fix the azimuth, but look at the elevation problem with the bending of light. Of course, we could have it in the azimuth, too, but that could be the curve. You think you're looking straight ahead, but you may not. Back to you, Dick.
Is it 2QIQ with a comment?
Now, we've seen gravitational lensing with supermassive groups of galaxies, but that's just a couple of degrees of bending. Nowhere near enough to curve back. Now, Glenn, straighten us out on all this. KC2QIQ, KQRIW.
Nick, would you agree that if we were to take our Hubble and just basically just kind of like point it in all 360 degrees and all three axes, and just take a look at all ends, that you know, looking as far as the telescope can look in all directions, that would be the beginning of time? Would you kind of like believe that?
Well, first of all, a small fraction of a degree was observed with some of those deep field pictures, and you see 2,600 galaxies that you've never seen before. In that small fraction of a degree, 41,000 square degrees in the sphere. So civilization is not going to live long enough to do a Hubble deep field in all possible directions. You just choose a nice, calm, dark direction. It's not going to give you problems with Earth getting in the way and Sun getting in the way. You take this picture, and from all you can tell, and by the way, they're done two different directions, from all you can tell, what you see in one direction is not that different in number of galaxies and depth of those galaxies and distances and the Hubble constants and so on. In any one direction is pretty much similar to the other. So you can make a guess that if you could live long enough to do it in all directions at once, you wouldn't see anything any different. That's one possible interpretation, Glenn. Over to you, Glenn.
Yeah, I think we're really in agreement on this, Dick. And I see now the next thing is this. The next part of this question that's really setting you up into something, and you'll see where I'm going with this, is that we're not in the middle. So we're like offset someplace. We don't know exactly where we are in the universe, but we're somewhere, but certainly not in the center. I think that's a pretty good idea too. Did you agree with that one?
If it's infinite, there's no center, right, Glenn?
Well, as you look at the Hubble constant of all stuff expanding away from us, and the stuff further away is expanding faster, and the stuff further away expanding faster is also accelerating faster. And by the way, in order to use the usual definition of dark energy is proposed to be a repulsive force that's pushing the stuff at the perimeter of the observable universe away from us. And the further the stuff is away from us, the faster it is accelerating. So you have to speculate a repulsive force that increases in repulsive force with distance. That's doubly mysterious. Everything we know obeys inverse square law of attraction over long distances. And attraction obeys inverse square law, meaning that closer to the massive object, you get more gravity. So here's this dark energy that does the opposite. It's stronger at longer distances, and it's repulsive. Boy, there's not much evidence for that. I mean, it's a concept that sort of explains things temporarily. I don't think that stuff is being repulsed. I think it's being sucked away by the higher densities of those outer galaxies that are beyond our observable universe, our observable sphere. Over to you, Glenn, KQRIW.
Well, I'm just trying to make a point here that if every angle that we can look around us is the beginning of time, and we're not really in the center, the closest or the shortest distance between any two points in a straight line would be the shortest distance to, you know, should be the most accurate point distance between us and the beginning of time. So that would theoretically tell us which, where our real location is in the, our position in the universe. And they do have spots in the, you know, where they've been able to detect the beginning of time or what they believe to be the beginning of time by looking into certain dark spots of space. Let me let it drop. Now, with this time and space folding over each other, starts coming into places. Well, if one line between us and the beginning of time is the shortest, that is the least distorted line between us and the beginning of time. But if you can see the beginning of time at any other angle from us, then obviously, and we're seeing it all at the same time, then obviously there is a time warp between those, that same distance and us, because obviously if we're not in the center, and but you can still see the beginning of time in all these other directions, there has to be a warp in time between us and the beginning of time, depending on which angle you look at the beginning of time at. KC2, QIQ.
Comment?
Yeah, I'm going to go over to Roy in a minute. You've used the word beginning of time, and I don't accept that one. At the extreme distance of all of those Hubble Deep Field pictures, you see a huge amount of redshift. That's as far as you can see, so to speak. We start getting to very large D numbers. Everything expanding away from everything else is a little bit like being in the middle of a cake that's being cooked and expanded, and it's a bunch of raisins distributed throughout the cake, and you and I are sitting on one of those raisins, and all the other raisins are moving away from us because the whole cake is expanding. The universe is like that. When you're in the middle of that cake, let's assume it's a very large cake, it's got a whole lot of raisins, and you and I are sitting on one of those raisins, and they're all expanding away from us. In that environment, you don't stand much of a chance of finding out where is the middle of the cake. AC2GS, K2RW, go ahead, Roy.
AC2GS, two points. One of the major theories is that everything is the center. I wouldn't take it as a pie, I would take it as a balloon. If you take a balloon that's uninflated, an infinitely small balloon, it's a point. And then as you inflate it, it gets larger and larger. Now, what portion of the surface of that balloon is the center? Well, for all intent purposes, any point can be determined, can be considered the center. It's all relative. That's number one. Number two is the beginning of time. If it wasn't for inflation, yes, possibly. But unfortunately, inflation expanded the universe faster than the speed of light. So we are only seeing a subset of the total universe, the observable universe. Some people think that it's 1/250th of the real thing. Others think it's this 10 to the 23rd as extra universe out there that we cannot see, we cannot observe. And it's all conjecture because we cannot see it, and there's no technology yet that can do that.
There's a little bit of past history, though. As I've said a number of times, we've been humbled 5 times before. We used to think the Earth was the center of everything. Galileo and others convinced us that no, there's a solar system that's the center of our local stuff. And well, we'd like to believe the solar system was the center. Well, it's not. It's just a nice star, medium-sized star, midway between downtown and the suburbs of this island universe that became galaxy. You wanted to believe the galaxy was the beginning, is the middle of everything, and we're part of it. Well, we're part of a galactic group. Well, you want to believe the galactic group is everything? Well, not necessarily. There's a hell of a lot more. So 5 times in a row, we've been humbled. Each time when we thought we're near the center and that everything was done in our favor, so to speak. If you've got enough spiritual background, it's easy to believe that. But I think we're about to be humbled again. For us to think that there was only one Big Bang, and we're part of it, there never was another, there's not any other galaxies out there, that takes a lot of arrogance. There's no end to this system. And by the way, the expanding dots on the balloon is a tough way, let me drop it. It's a tough way to look at the expansion of the universe because that's a so-called, I would call it a two-dimensional skin. The expansion of the stuff in the universe is really three-dimensional. It really is raisins in a cake. and they're all expanding away from each other. No matter what direction you look in that cake, because it's a very large cake, you see more cake and more raisins. And the ones further away, you're expanding further. So it's a three-dimensional thing. It's not an expanding skin of a balloon. I think the expanding skin of a balloon is a little bit too simplistic. That's an opinion, Roy. AC2GS, KQRIW.
Comment.
AC2GS. Usually the description is a little bit more esoteric. They describe it as a hyperdimensional sphere. So in the same way that it's theoretically possible to construct in math a four-dimensional cube, a hypercube, this would be a hypersphere. But we're just using that as a description, a vague explanation for how there is no real center. And I don't know if there's 10 to the 23 times as much non-observable universe. That seems to be a lot of extra stuff. I mean, that makes for a hell of a it's pretty much the same thing as your multiverse. It's just that it's part of our universe, just we can't see it. It's a matter of nomenclature. It's the way you want to word things.
Now let's pick up John. I'm going to go back to you on that one. Go ahead, John.
KC2WGB, yeah. Quick comment, Dick. Do you think it's possible, all three of you gentlemen, if we look at it from the inflation point after the Big Bang, it was traveling at a tremendous speed. Nothing was developing yet, so there were no gravitons, if that's what's controlling gravity. Is it possible that the outer ring of elements that are expanding at such a great rate from us, the gravitons have not caught up to it yet? Just a thought.
Yeah, these gravity waves, we'd love to be able to detect them, but boy, they're tough. The question I got for Roy, I'm asking a very vague question. If you had to put a percentage of everything that's in the multiverse, assuming there is a multiverse, give me a rough guess. What percentage of the universe, multiverse, what percentage is in our observable sphere, and what percentage do you feel is likely to be outside of our observable sphere? Question number one. And question number two, of the stuff that's outside, did all of it come from the Big Bang, or could some of it have been there before the Big Bang? Over to you, Ray.
KC2GS. Well, like I said, I mean, much better, greater minds than myself have conjectured this, and it's all conjecture because there's no way to prove it. I mean, you got a guy, a physicist, Alan Guth, who actually says that he thinks it's 3 × 10²³ more unobservable than observable. But a lot of people say it's about 250 times what we can observe. And there's a few smart alecks out there who think it's less, think that we're getting the lensing effect of the space-time warping around the edges, and what we're really looking at are not the edge in one direction, but the edge of the other direction that's warped around. But all of this is highly theoretical because there is no way to go past that light cone, at least no way that anyone knows yet.
Now, one of the things that I certainly don't know, and I think you know, so maybe you can tell me, and maybe make it clearer for other people too, what's the evidence for the so-called expansion period? In other words, right after the Big Bang, in theory, the soup that hadn't yet turned into protons, neutrons, electrons, atoms, molecules, and so on, planets, the soup in the beginning seems to, in many of the theories, have to be moving at much faster than the speed of light right after the Big Bang. What evidence that that had to happen? Why do we have to have greater than speed of light expansion in the beginning, Roy? AC2GS, K2RAW.
AC2GS. I have always had problems with inflation. I think it cheats the law of conservation of mass energy. But the way it was presented to me was as an explanation for the extreme uniformity of matter across the observable universe. And yes, there are imperfections, which have been noted, but they are very, very small. And the theorists believe that the reason for this great uniformity was the explosive nature of inflation at incredible speeds. I mean, you're talking about something that occurred in a 10 to the 32nd of a second.
Yeah, and at the speed of light, you end up with extremely small distances, you know, less than a Fermi length and whatever. You get to some real impossibilities there. Right now, we have reason to believe there's 10 to the 11 stars, roughly, per galaxy, and 10 to the 11 galaxies. There's 10 to the 22 solar masses out there. If you take Big Bang and the expansion and play it backwards, at one time, all of that stuff, 10 to the 22 solar masses, you could say was near at one spot at one time, very close to each other. You have to have a minimum of 3 solar masses to make a black hole. Really dumb first question I want to ask you is, when you have 10 to the 22 solar masses in one spot before the Big Bang, do you believe that was a black hole, Roy? Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, with the annoying aspect of inflation, you didn't have to have that much mass at the beginning, because supposedly inflation itself produces mass energy. There's an accounting trick that some physicists use, that gravity is negative mass energy, so that the total mass energy of our universe is zero. But the point of inflation is you don't necessarily have to start with the same amount of mass.
An awful lot of this is coming from the uniformity seen by the cosmic background radiation type stuff. If I've got a very large number of fine particles in, let's say, a spherical spot, and I blast off a good-sized chunk of dynamite or whatever in the middle of it, the laws of conservation of momentum in that situation will dictate that the amount of material that moves north, south, east, west, forward, backward, has to be very close to the same. Because of the law of conservation of momentum and energy, I'm going to almost automatically get uniformity if I've got a large enough number of particles to begin with, and as long as the explosion itself is near the center of all those particles. So from that point of view, to me, the uniformity of the cosmic microwave background is not so difficult to accept. Over to you, Roy, K2RIW.
AC2GS. I think the problem in the universe expanding is gravitational forces would cause clumping. So you have to now provide some means to get rid of that permutation. And they came up with inflation. Again, I think it's almost an accounting trick, but it's a very well-received theory.
The very beginning of that inflation, was the Higgs particle there, or did that come along later? What do you think, Roy?
D2GS. I think the particles coexisted because the temperatures were so high that the symmetry of all the particles had yet to be broken. And so any particle could spontaneously convert into any other particle. So I think they were all there in a very, very inconsistent changing state.
We've almost got this settled. We've almost figured it all out. And in 50 seconds, we're going to be cut off. This was TechNet number 1532. We've almost got the answer. What do you think, John? KC2WGB, K2RAW.
Yes, any moment now, we'll have it all. I'd like to thank everybody for this week, and we will see everybody next week. Dick, you be well. Everybody else on the net here, have fun. That's what we're here for. KC2WGB.
I grabbed the wrong microphone. Roy, awful glad that you've gotten up the antenna and able to talk to us direct. Nice to hear from you. So looking forward to more of these conversations. Bye-bye, you all. K2RIW.
Thank you for for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active. An error has occurred.
KC2WGB, this is NY2H. KC2WGB, this is NY2H.
Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. W2VL Repeater System. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Service event, and I'm usually on either 2 meter or 73 centimeter.